Okay.
Oh, I think he's a good old Irish boy. I think he's ribald enough, ribald. Say the word, ribald.
Right.
Enough to attract me. You know, he's kind of lusty and weird. Well, so we take it for a voice level here.
No, it's fine.
It is?
Fine.
Okay.
It has a little red dial on it.
Very good.
Okay.
Now you want to start with the fact that we owned our own property, that I was born in a house my father owned.
Okay.
And that he was the first, that was at 2719 and 2721. They are two flats that are stacked on Pine Street.
Pine Street.
In San Francisco. And the year was 1921. My brother was born in 1927. In the year 1926, my father built a house for my mother on Baker Street, which was the grandest house that we as blacks knew in San Francisco. It was a big-time $10,000 house and had a built-in refrigerator where when the iceman came, you never had to empty the pan underneath because the architect for the house, they had an architect at those prices because blacks simply did not have houses that were that valuable. But by selling these flats, my father had come by the land and he could invest the money into the house. There was a pipe that ran from underneath the refrigerator down into the garage and into the sewer system, so you never had to worry about remembering to empty the pan under the icebox, which was a very fine amenity.
Could you describe the flats that you first lived in?
Yes. For one thing, the loo was on the back porch.
The
bathroom.
Oh.
The toilet.
What was it called?
Oh, I call it the loo a lot.
Oh. Okay. And what
we had, I remember when San Francisco had gas lights. I hope I don't follow myself up about the year of birth at this point. But as a child, I remember with my mother that we used to time for when it would be 6 o'clock by going into the living room and watching the lamplighter come along and ignite the gas wick.
Mm-hmm. What was the neighborhood like? What types of people lived in?
Well, it was an all-white neighborhood. As a matter of fact, the house that I was talking to you about that my father built in 1926, the neighbors, it was an all-white neighborhood. It is now part of the ghetto. But at that time, my father's neighbors got up a petition to keep him out.
What was their ethnic background? Was there
varied. The property on the corner was actually industrial, the Conklin Rug Company. Mrs. Conklin ran her business from there and lived there.
But it wasn't predominantly Irish or Italian or any particular
But it was.
Group.
It was shanty Irish as opposed to lace curtain Irish.
What were your relationships like with the neighbors on Baker Street?
No one spoke to us.
No one?
Which was all right with us, because we weren't there but a very short time. We were there a year. My mother was pregnant during that year, having my brother. Then my father began his connection with Senator Hiram Johnson. Senator Hiram Johnson had this magnificent showplace of an estate in Hillsboro at 2300 Forest View Drive. The place was a show place because Senator Johnson's daughter, Martha Ruddy Johnson, was a very social woman who was not born high. She had been an orphan, which shows you there's luck in this life. She had been a very old orphan in a Midwest orphanage. She was beyond the years where a child is cute. When along came this flat-haired, flat blue-eyed couple who were farmers who adopted her and raised her in the proper manner to like the daintiness of flowers and to be neat and proper about herself and what silver to use at the table and so forth. This was back in the beginning of Iowa. And these people had a farm that later became the business district of the city of Peoria, Iowa. So this woman inherited all of this money. and was married to Senator Hiram Johnson's weak son, Archibald, who jumped out of a window during the middle of the Depression. After he poisoned their Great Danes. Oh, he was a tad, a touch weird.
Well, on Baker Street again, we were about six or seven.
Yes.
And when playmates and those things are important, and no one would play with you?
Or well, it was going to get worse. Because at that point, I had no one to play with. We then moved to Hillsborough. We're living on an estate which isolates us automatically. Mm-hmm. When Senator Johnson forced the Hillsborough District School to take me in to continue my education, which was part of my father's deal in arranging to live on this estate, mm-hmm. was that I should receive an education. Mm-hmm. When I went to school, I was going to school with the children of millionaires whose when school was over every day, the limousines and the chauffeurs were lined up, and the governesses. I got on my bicycle and pedaled 7 miles back to the estate, which is the way things were. So you can bet that I wasn't spoken to there outside of a classroom.
Okay. Well, who were your friends on the estate?
I had no friends. I didn't have dolls even. I used to play with flowers and pretend like they were ladies in ball gowns going to a party. Uh-huh. And in the summertime, when school was out in San Francisco, my colored friends in San Francisco would come and spend a week or two with me.
Mm-hmm. How did your mother feel about this? Did she feel that the deal of living there was worth it?
My mother was outraged. Here she had this great big house, could be the prime mover in San Francisco, and she wasn't living in her house. And she was really salty with my dad. Well, my father saw it as a way he could rent the house out for $100 a month, which took care of his mortgage for that house. Mm-hmm. So therefore, whatever he was paid in wages, we were living free, we were living in the gatehouse mm-hmm. on this estate, he could save that. And there was a depression on, so he saw it as a chance to get ahead. And my dad always had his eye on getting ahead,
right.
at whatever cost.
So how long were you on this estate?
We were there until 1933, about, when the senator's son, the Teapot Dome scandals had already happened. Mm-hmm. Hiram Johnson was back in California, but in disgrace. Mm-hmm. His daughter-in-law, who ran the estate, her gardens were done in the manner of the gardens at the Palace of Versailles. Oh. Every year she went to Europe to buy her clothes because she wouldn't think of having American designers do her wardrobe for her. In staff, she kept a French maid who was brought from Paris. She had a modiste in residence who made her clothes. She had an English butler. She had my father as the colored chauffeur. She had two Chinese gardeners and two Chinese cooks, a first and a second cook.
So she was well prepared for guests.
You could say. So one of the guests was so grand that she ran off with him when the Depression hit. She left Hiram Johnson's son, Archibald, and ran off with a commander from the Navy, who was a dashing fellow. And it was just after that that Archibald, the son of Hiram Johnson, committed suicide. Well, when he committed suicide, of course, everything came down then. We had to get off of that estate in a hurry because the police came rushing in everything. So my father had the people who were living in our house, which was the Tull family, Chris Tull. He got them out of our house. We moved back into our house. We moved back in without having enough furniture to furnish the whole house. We had to have part of the house closed off, like the living room. Mm-hmm. They hung curtains on the French doors in the living room because there was no furniture in there. And from some friends, the Joe Roses, we borrowed a bedroom set, which gave me a bedroom set for my room. My mother and father had their own. My brother slept on the sun porch because there was a Murphy bed made into the wall there. Mm-hmm. A Murphy bed is the bed that comes out from the wall. So the dining room was shut off because we had no furniture in it. We had garden furniture that we acquired from the Johnson estate. Mm-hmm. You know how things are acquired.
Right.
He just moved with us. So therefore, in the breakfast room, and we were so grand, we had a breakfast room. Anything the white folks had, we had, too. So we had wrought iron furniture in the breakfast room in the house. Today it's fashionable. In the 20s, it was unheard of.
You were about, what, 15, 16 when you moved back to San Francisco?
No, I was younger than that. I was maybe, we must move back earlier than that, because I was maybe 9 or 10 when we moved back to San Francisco.
So you were down in Hillsboro for about 3 or 4 years.
That sounds right. Mm-hmm.
When you came back to the city...
What happened was my father wanted me to graduate from the school because, of course, it would have been an honor. So I used to have to take the Geary streetcar down to Market, transfer at Market, and there was a streetcar that ran from San Francisco to San Mateo. And I would have to take the streetcar and ride to El Cerrito Avenue in San Mateo, then get off and walk for about 2 miles to get to the school. But he was bound and determined that I should have my diploma from that school, which I did.
You graduated high school in Hillsboro?
No, this is grammar school. This grammar is this fancy school that I went to.
Oh, and they even gave diplomas at that level?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But they fixed me.
Why?
At graduation, they had all the children's names listed, and of course all the families were there. We were graduated from the brand new gymnasium. And after each child's name was a star because the child had been outstanding in this subject, that subject, or the other. Everybody but me. Now, I had been an outstanding student in French. I had been an excellent student in English. Actually, my entire life has been spent with words, mm-hmm. because as an actor on the stage, I'm dealing with words. When I was not an actor, I was in the selling business, mm-hmm. with cosmetics or with wholesale drugs for a wholesale drug company. Mm-hmm. So I'm still dealing with words. So I had always been a fine English student, but no star appeared behind my name. So you see, who had the last laugh there? Sapphire.
What was the name of the school?
The Hillsboro District School.
And it was considered a public school. It was supported by taxes.
It was supported by taxes from the District of Hillsboro, yes.
Right. Do you remember, what was your relationship living in the gatehouse with the people in the other house? Did you ever play with their children? Or?
They had no children. But when they were going to be coming up and down the driveway, we had been warned to make ourselves scarce. So we shinnied up the trees, or we hid in the bushes, or did something. We got out of the way, because we weren't going to have our father coming down on us. Because when he said, "I don't want you to do something," you didn't do it. It's not like children are today. For instance, my father used to tell my brother and I that he did not allow any B's to come in his house, which meant he'd have nothing but A students. Well, he frightened me so bad that I went through high school in 3.5 years.
How did they never invited you in for Christmas or those kind
yes.
of occasions?
Oh, yes. At Christmas, Mrs. Johnson would have a party for the children of the people who worked for her. And I was always the hostess since I lived on the estate. Now, this was kind of an international group here because we had the children with a French background, we had the little English girl, Noreen, and we had some of the Chinese children. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The cook's children were acceptable, but since the gardeners worked outside, his children were considered too common, so they were never invited. And she always had a beautiful pink and silver tree. She was a very blonde white woman. Mm-hmm. And she'd come wafting in like a ghost, you know, with all of this chiffon, and pat us on the head, and proceed to serve us food that we didn't know anything about.
Did you look forward to this, or did you just tolerate it?
Well, tolerate it. Well, I went because I was scared to death. because for a month before it was going to happen, my father was busy telling me which fork I should use and what I should do with my napkin when I got through eating. And don't reach for your glass that way. Pick it up by the stem. You embarrass me. And having gone through all of that, you know, getting through that evening, she wouldn't even stay for the dinner. She would come in while the children were eating, and she would always have a beautifully decorated table with a mirror with ice skating figures on it and white cotton, you know, representing the snow and pretty little individual Christmas trees. She did it up like she was going to be entertaining other children. Perhaps she did not know any different.
Did the family maintain, as you remember as a child, relationships with people in San Francisco while you were down here?
Yes. So, mm-hmm. Every weekend my father was off, and every weekend we were in San Francisco.
So you weren't really
isolated completely. No, my mother and father maintained a complete social life in San Francisco. As a matter of fact, one year Mrs. Johnson was off in Paris getting her wardrobe. Senator Hiram Johnson was back in Washington taking care of the Teapot Dome or whatever. And there was no one on the estate. The servants were off during this period. There was no one on the estate but my family and the Chinese gardeners. Well, the weekend came, and it was during the summer. And the Chinese gardeners went away for the weekend, as we knew they would. And my mother and father decided to throw the biggest bash that had been thrown in Hillsborough's history. They invited all of those Negroes from San Francisco and Oakland and Berkeley. They all descended up this very posh drive to Hillsborough.
Do you remember that? Do I remember it?
Mrs. Johnson, realizing that I was a lonely child with no playmates, had given me a playground, which I had to play in by myself. But I had swings. They used to have a double swing, you know, where four people could swing at the same time, but there was only me. I had the seesaw, but there was nobody to get on the other side. I had the monkey bars. Naturally, she gave me those. And I had a slide that came down into a sandbox. Well, I remember that at this party, a woman named Annette Holmes, who was a perfectly beautiful cream-colored woman with flaming red natural hair, and she had on an emerald green chiffon dress. My father admired her a great deal, and my mother hated her guts. Anyway, this was during bootlegging days, but there was no such thing as bootlegging days for my father. Wherever my father's boss bought his whiskey, my father bought his whiskey. And my father used to buy his whiskey by the keg. He would buy it and drop fruit into it.
Uh-huh.
And long about then he'd bury the cave. And a year later, you go back and take a piece of fruit out of there and bite into it, and you'd be drunk for days. So at this wild party that they're throwing now in Hillsborough on the grounds, all the guests are outside swinging on the swings, and this woman in this beautiful gown, this lovely woman, Annette Holmes, decides that she's in a circus. And she climbs up on the slide, goes up the steps with my bicycle. She's going to ride the bicycle down into the sandbox. Of course she fell and ruined the side of her face and all that. But this was such a wild party that all the servants on the news spread like wildfire throughout Hillsborough, on all the other estates came, and they were standing, you know, on the sidelines watching the darkies having a party.
Did you have music, too?
My father had arranged, they didn't have such things as stereo then, but he had arranged to put loudspeakers in the eucalyptus trees. So the music was blasted, and the hit song of the day was the peanut vendor.
Oh, I wish I could have been there.
I remember that very vividly.
Okay, now we're back in the more modest circumstances of Baker Street. What would you say were the major differences between your parents?
Well, the fact that my mother was of American slavery background, my father never let her forget that, because he used to tell her that the West Indians had never been slaves. That they wouldn't allow themselves to be captured and be slaves. That only the dumb American darkies got caught, thrown into slavery. And my mother hated to be told that so bad, because of course she had a better education than him, that she used to say, well, at least she wasn't a West Indian. As though a West Indian was a bad thing to be. And of course, we all know at this point that it's been Negro history that the West Indian has generally been the fellow who has amassed the most as far as money is concerned in this country. Because as my father has so often said, when he got off the boat, he saw the opportunities that were here, and he couldn't understand why the American Negroes were standing around scratching their heads and not doing nothing.
But in terms of what were the other differences between them?
Well, my father was a player and my mother was a non-drinking moralist.
Church going?
Sometimes. She was a Baptist.
Oh, And by a player, were you aware of him being a player as a child?
No, I just knew that he was a very popular fellow, that everybody liked him. And I wanted to be just like that, for everybody to like me.
Do you, which parent do you feel you were closer to?
To my dad, without a doubt. My father was the first one who indoctrinated me in Negro history. As a chauffeur, you were required to know something about the motor of the car that you drove, which meant that he would bring his boss's car home, give him a chance to be at home, to clean the spark plugs. And I would sit on he had a polo chest that we had come by in some manner. And I remember as a youngster sitting on that polo chest and my father giving me a book about Toussaint-Lautrec.
L'Ouverture. Right.
And me reading The Crisis and understanding what a lynching was, and all of the other things that were pertinent to a black kid growing up at that time, which is when my father explained to me about never marry a white man, because you can't come out on top in that arrangement.
Were you spanked?
Was I spanked? Is the Pope a Catholic? Along with this polo chest, my father acquired a polo stick that had the mallet end gone, but it had that strap, and it was made out of that cane, you know, which is limber, and he could lay that across your back where it wouldn't show. I can remember being whipped so badly that I could not go to high school because there were marked stripes across my legs. My father was very concerned about what the neighbors were going to say, what the Browns were talking about. And my mother knew that, and she knew how to agitate it. She knew just where to lay it on. Maybe she was keeping him off of her, I don't know.
Did they argue often?
That's all I remember. They had a very poor relationship. He was a great gentleman to have even tolerated her, really, because she was a woman who somewhere she got confused. Maybe it's lack of mentality, I'm not sure. During the period that we were in Hillsboro, and she saw my father opening doors for Mrs. Johnson, whom he was employed by, and running errands for her, we had a telephone arrangement between Mrs. Johnson's bedroom and our gatehouse, and it was nothing for her to call my father at 2 o'clock in the morning to tell him, Walter, I want you to go find me some peach ice cream. Well, the little village of Burlingame had long been closed down, which meant he had to drive into San Francisco to look for the ice cream, which was a 20-mile drive there, a 20-mile drive back. Well, my mother saw Mrs. Johnson doing all these things, and my mother, who's very fair complexioned anyway, decided she should do these things, that she was Mrs. Johnson.
Oh, I see.
Which my dad was not going to hold still for 1 minute. That was just cold. But as a result of that, she was never the mother housekeeper. She always felt that she should have had help to do her housework for her. That, well, I did the cooking. Mm-hmm. I learned to cook in the school in Hillsboro, as wealthy children learn to cook. Mm-hmm. I was taught how to boil beets, how to bake a potato, and I think that, and how to make white sauce. And that's all I learned how to cook.
You mean béarnaise?
No, not béarnaise sauce. White sauce.
What is that?
That's what white folks eat all the time, is white sauce. It's made with flour and water and flour and butter and milk.
Oh.
You've had cream peas, cream carrots and stuff.
Yeah, right.
That's white sauce.
Oh, I see. So you had, what did your mother do then? If you were
she sat on the, we had a sun porch. We were very classy Negroes. We had us a breakfast room, we had us a sun porch, and we had a country place mm-hmm. with a swimming pool. Now get to that.
Yes, we will.
She would sit on the sun porch and file her nails or paint her toenails carmine. Carmine was the color at that time. Mm-hmm. That's C-A-R-M-I-N-E. Mm-hmm.
I know, it's very scarlet red.
Yes, it's very red. Or else she would read the True Confessions magazine. Well, being as of this age now, I realize that True Confession magazine was the beginning of the porties. You know, it would be the story of some luckless woman whose husband had done her wrong, who had, and she had taken a lover and he'd been worse than the husband and all of that.
Right.
Well, my mother never read anything but those. She never picked up a novel to read, and there were always plenty of mystery books around our house because Mrs. Johnson read mystery books, and instead of them being thrown out, my father would just pass by the garbage bin and pick them up on his way mm-hmm. and bring them on down to our house.
But she was a college-educated woman.
Yes.
But it didn't seem to go beyond that. She
got out of school, and that was it, period. She never actually taught, although she had been educated to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. And of course, when she came to California, this was such a prejudiced area, she would not have been allowed to teach anyway.
Mm-hmm. So she was sort of...
She was not interested in domestic things. She didn't like to cook. She didn't want to keep her house. And she didn't want to read what you and I would read, mm-hmm. just for general information.
So how did she fill those other hours? Was she very socially active?
Yes, she was a member of the Lynx in later years. She was a charter member. The Lynx is a fine group mm-hmm. of local women.
Mm-hmm. It's a national organization.
Yes, it is. Right. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And, but I guess most of the time you can recall her was in grooming herself.
Yes. My first lesson in cosmetics came from her during the middle of the Depression when most of the colored families were having trouble putting a stew together. My mother sent away and got $100 worth of cosmetics by Edna Wallace Hopper, who was a woman who was supposed to have been in her 80s that looked like she was 15, you know. And there were all of these different clay masks and astringents and different potions that you put on your face that were going to make you young immediately. And maybe you think my father did not raise the devil at that point. Please believe me, he did. He took the house apart, rafter by rafter.
But did he ever lay hands on her?
Never. Well, she was kind of an evil colored woman, too. I can remember her being in the kitchen, and she and my father would be having a very bad argument, and she'd roll her big eyes at him, and she'd shuffle a pot, you know, that would have boiling water in it or something, and he'd hustle out in the kitchen.
Your brother was, do you feel your brother was close to either one of your parents?
Yes, he was very close to my mother.
That's a little Was he like her in other
No,
ways?
Boys are always close to their mothers. And the girls are to their dads. He was a college graduate.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of games did you play?
All the rock ones.
Besides that you were telling me about playing with the flowers and that kind of thing. Were you mischievous?
Yes, I was a bad kid. On this estate, there were very tall trees because Hillsborough is an area where the wilderness has been manicured. So I used to climb up in those tall eucalyptus trees and hang upside down from the branches. It's my monkey.